Thank you, TJ, for leading songs this evening. Good to see everybody that is here. God is good to give us more time to know Him and to know His Word. As I mentioned this morning in the lesson, that all Scripture is given by the inspiration of God and is profitable, and that had a primary context to Timothy about the Old Testament Scriptures that had been fully completed, and that there are great lessons we can learn that help equip us to be ready for every good work in our work today under Christ. And we're going to study one of those Old Testament lessons tonight as we pick up in our storyline of David, the life of David. This is number 58 for those that are counting. As mentioned before in our last study of David, that the last four chapters of 2 Samuel are not arranged in chronological order, but rather form an appendix of sorts to the book 2 Samuel. So looking at it thematically then, we will be in two different chapters today. And I've titled this lesson, A Few Good Men. As Samuel shares with us some of the, quote, war stories of David's mighty men. And these stories remind us of the success of David, or really of anyone for that matter, never comes by that one person alone, or by David alone. It is always a team effort. And for those of us in the Lord's church, it's with God as our leader ultimately, but it's a team effort. And all play roles that are important, and none of them, no matter how small they may seem, are forgotten by God or neglected by God. And so as the great song that we often sing, I want to be a worker for the Lord. There is work that I can do that we can all do. They've got to find that place, find that niche, and say, this is something that I can undertake, that I have experience in, that I have ability in, and I could do this for the benefit of the Lord and His body. There's work that we all can do. And we're going to see that that was certainly the case with these few good men. These mighty men of David that shine forth as stars forever and ever in the life of David. Let's turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 21. 2 Samuel chapter 21. And we'll start here with a little bit of context. So verse 15, it says there in 2 Samuel 21, 15, when the Philistines were at war again with Israel. Oh, how often David fought the Philistines, over and over and over again. Notice in verse 18, now it happened afterward that they were again at battle with the Philistines at Gob. And again in verse 19, again there was war at Gob with the Philistines. The Philistines were a constant foe. And God raised a king up partly for this reason, that he would deliver his people from the hand of the Philistines. Hold your place there and look quickly over in 1 Samuel chapter 9. 1 Samuel chapter 9, just rewinding back the hand of time, even before Saul is finally elected, and God says, you're going to do this. And in 1 Samuel 9, 16, tomorrow about this time, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall anoint him commander over my people Israel, that he may save my people from the hand of the Philistines. For I've looked upon my people, because their cry has come to me. So God said, my people kept crying out and crying out and crying out. Deliver us from the hand of the Philistines. They're too mighty. They're too powerful. They got these giants. And God says, I've heard them. And this is one reason I'm going to give you a leader, a king, so that he'll deliver you from the hand of the Philistines. Saul was unsuccessful in that. I think ultimately God knew it was going to be David that would be successful in doing that. David would be the king that would finally forever subdue them. But back here in 2 Samuel 21, we need to remember this. David is older now, probably in his 60s. How is this 60-year-old going to finish off the Philistines? I'll tell you how. With a few good men. That's how. And here's the record in 2 Samuel 21. Now, no doubt, David, he believed he still had the stamina. He believed in that he could do this, but he was be dead wrong, as we're about to see. I mean, by this time, there's gray in his beard. There's etched lines deep within his face, stiffened limbs. He was no longer that youth that killed Goliath. Time has taken its toll. And so in verse 15, it says, "When the Philistines were at war again with Israel, David and his servants went with them down and fought against the Philistines. And David grew faint." Verse 16. "Then Ishbi-benob, who was one of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose bronze spear was 300 shekels, who was bearing a new sword, thought, now's the time." He thought he could kill David. And that's what he would set out to do. Ishbi here with his new equipment could see and witness the aged opponent before him. And Ishbi felt this was his chance to kill David, and he almost does. But at the last second, David's fearless nephew and commander Abishai saves the day with nerves of steel and a temper like a furnace. He jumps into the battle fray. Verse 17, "But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and struck the Philistine and killed him." This time, Abishai, if you remember from previous times, "Can I take the head of Shimei off?" He asked it at least twice. And he didn't wait for permission this time. He jumps in and kills the giant, kills him on the spot. Then he turns to David, and the men turn to David. There in verse 17, "The men of David swore to him, saying, 'You shall go out no more with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel.'" So what we're reading here, folks, is that this story marks the end of David's military career. He will not, he cannot go out to fight with his men anymore. He must hang up his sword. It is ironic that his career began against a giant and ends against another giant. Now why? Why would they wouldn't let him go out to war anymore? It's because they said, "Listen, if you die, the lamp of Israel will be quenched. That means it'll be put out." They didn't want that to happen. Now, this metaphor suggests the ever-burning lamp that was in the tabernacle. Remember that lamp there where the priests were commanded to never let it ever go out, day or night? And so they always had someone there stationed by it so that the fire would always be lit. And this was a symbol of the Lord's favor, that God was with His people. So it should never ever go out, because God is always with His people. And so by him saying this to David, or the men saying this to David, that if the king is snuffed out, well, so could the kingdom be. If the king goes, the kingdom goes. The light must be kept burning. David, you cannot die on the battlefield. It's time to retire the sword. We've got it from here. It's okay. You've got a few good men. And then we begin to read some more of these other war stories of these other good men. Verse 18, "Now it happened afterward that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. Then Shibbekai the Hushathite killed Saph, who was one of the sons of the giant." Evidently there was some renowned giant where he had this offspring of other giants, and this was known. Verse 19, "Again, there was war at Gob with the Philistines, where Elhanan, the son of Jeri, Oregim, the Bethlehemite, killed the brother of Goliath, the Gittite." So Goliath had a brother, and he's killed, and the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. That kind of sounds like Goliath's weapons too. Verse 20. Yet again, there was war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature. And listen, the Bible gives these details so that it really imprints upon your mind how scary this opponent would be. It says, who had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot, 24 in number. And he also was born to the giant. So when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, David's brother, killed him. Some amazing stories. One by one, the giants fell. And the last one, whoo! This one, wow, he was one to be reckoned with. He was a beast, a force of nature. Six fingers, six toes, and in case one couldn't count, he just says, it's 24. That's 24 in total. Wow. And it's interesting, the Bible tells he did exactly what Goliath did. It's the exact same word when it says he defied the armies of Israel. Defied, this is the same one does that too. So could you imagine him going out of his tent in the morning saying, I defy you, armies of Israel, come out and fight me. And Jonathan walks out of his tent, he says, sure. That was the son of David's brother. He did it. I love these details. They're tremendous details that add so much color to the story. So verse 22, it says, these four were born to the giant in Gath and fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Do you notice how it said it fell by the hand of David? Well, how'd that happen? Because we know he retired. And we know he almost got killed by one, right? This Ishbi one up here at the top, verse 16. So how did they fall by the hand of David and by the hands of his servants? He could no longer fight. I tell you, it fell by David's hand because, boy, David could still inspire. You remember before David? When Goliath was defying the armies of Israel, who would step out of their tent to fight him? Nobody. Saul didn't inspire any of that confidence in his men, and he certainly didn't have it himself. But after David, it's a different story, isn't it? He couldn't hold the men back. I'll take him. I got this one. Right? After David, he had all kinds of men that were willing to step up and fight the Goliaths of their time. You see, true leaders don't have to fight every battle, but they can instruct and inspire another generation to. You see, there comes a time when generals have to stay on the hill and watch through binoculars. And when the victory is won, often they credit the general, don't they? Because of his wisdom, his experience, and the way in which he was able to inspire his men to fight the good fight. Often he had to have led by example in his youth. Or when Air Force pilots have to quit flying and they start training the younger pilots. They're passing the torch, and their example of service and fearlessness and experience now multiplies to many. And so, friends, that's how these four giants fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. You know, way back when I left Tacoma, Washington, and then Justin left, and then eventually Mom left. We were worried a little bit. What will happen to the work? Mom helped start that work. Justin was a part of the beginning of that work. What would take place? And honestly, we ought to be a little ashamed. Maybe it was a little prideful to think about that. Because they ended up thriving, and they ended up growing and becoming stronger. See, the example was set, and they took the torch, and they continue to hold the torch high. So we can inspire or we can expire. But one day we will all retire to a degree. But we can still have an impact, right? Inspire or expire. You want to be put on the shelf and out of duty? Or do you want to say there's work that I can do? That's what these men did. They were inspired by David and got to work. So we go now from giant killers. That might be point one here, giant killers. To now, point two, the legendary three. The legendary three. This is David's Hall of Fame, and it continues over in chapter 23, starting in verse 8. Chapter 23 and verse 8. All right, verse 8. These are the names of the mighty men whom David had: Jehoshabeb, Basabeth, the Tachmonite, chief among the captains. He was called Adino the Enzite, because he had killed 800 men at one time. That's amazing, isn't it? Jehoshabed Behesabeth. That is a long name. I might just call him JB from now on. And you know, they gave him a nickname as well. They called him Adino. I'm not sure exactly why, but that's what they named him. And it says, because he killed 800 at one time. I mean, that's almost movie-like, right? But it's real. It's real. It's fascinating. You can see why he'd be one of the legendary three. Verse 9. After him was Eleazar the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, one of the three mighty men of David when they defied the Philistines, who were gathered there for battle, and the men of Israel had retreated. So get the scene, right? Here you got Eleazar, and he's fighting. And all of a sudden his coming men begin to retreat. Oh, we're being overrun. Run for it. He stands his ground. Verse 10, he arose and attacked the Philistines until his hand was weary and his hand stuck to the sword. The Lord brought about a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to plunder. Again, I love these details. Absolutely eyewitness testimony going on here. Here is Eleazar, and everybody was running away, and he keeps fighting, and he fights so hard that the hand cleaves to his sword. It's stuck to his sword. I always found that detail fascinating. Some of you might recall, I actually did a sermon on this guy right here, the man whose hand clave to the sword, because I was fascinated by that. Those details, his determination, his focus. I did a little research way back when and found out that there was other occasions in battle and war, civil war, different wars, where men had fought so hard with that sword in the hand that indeed the hand claved to the sword. They could not open it again. The muscles had tensed and clenched. It couldn't be opened until after the battle. They finally had to surgically remove it, cutting the tendon so that it could release the grip on the sword. Now, I don't think that happened to Eleazar here. I don't think so. But it goes to show that things like that can take place and can happen. And he's in the legendary three. Verse 11. And after him was Shammah the son of Agi, the Harahite. The Philistines had gathered together into a troop where there was a piece of ground full of lentils. Again, the details. Here's this lentil field. You remember that lentil field? Yeah, that was the field. There he was, and he was standing there. And the people fled from the Philistines, but not him. Verse 12. He stationed himself in the middle of the field and defended it and killed the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory. It's amazing. These were amazing warriors. And David is acknowledging that he never did it alone. He had a few good men. But I love how the few good men all point to one good God. Did you notice that? Here, even with these legendary three, the middle of verse 10, it says, the Lord brought about a great victory that day. At the end of verse 12, so the Lord brought about a great victory. You see, they knew the battle was the Lord's too, just like David did when he fought Goliath. The battle was the Lord. Now, human effort and courage is needed, but it is not enough. It still needs the help of the Lord God. Salvation is only by the Lord, and we can only do all things through Christ, who strengthens us today as well, if we're honest about it and acknowledge that. And so like them, it is also today that God must receive the glory, because you and I know how incredible these feats are by these men. They're absolutely incredible. Even the best fighters in all the world today have not racked up numbers like these. God gave gifts to men, and He sure did to these few good men of David. I mean, they're recorded here. Like you said of Jeremiah, I knew you before you were even formed in your mother's womb. Could you see him saying that of Eliezer? Or JB? Or Shammah? I know you. And you're going to be one of David's few good men. I'm going to bless you with a talent, an ability that you can assist in the kingdom. God gave gifts to men, and He sure did to these few good men. Well, so here we go from giant slayers to number two, legendary three, to now number three, what I'd call a story, a short story of devoted love. Short story. You know, remember my series on short Bible stories? And I was thinking about that, and I was like thinking, I've read this story. I was like, I know this has got to be in one of that. I shared this one of the short Bible stories, and I had to look back through it. No, I didn't. I don't know why I didn't. This is beautiful. It's a beautiful story that comes next, and one that certainly inspires and shows, illustrating so beautifully how devoted they were to their king. And how we ought to be devoted to our king. Now, the story is a blast from the past. All the way back to when David was in the cave of Adullam, a much younger Dave. The Philistine presence was still strong, and they occupied David's hometown, Bethlehem. Notice verse 13. Then the three of the 30 chief men went down at harvest time and came to David at the cave of Adullam. And the troop of Philistines encamped in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. Now, what David says next should not have been taken seriously. What he is doing is essentially walking down memory lane, like we all love to do. Perhaps you've done that recently, like I have. We're in the works of planning out our road trip to take place in the summer, and one of our stops is going to be in Kansas, Wichita, Kansas, there near Derby for me and Mays for Julie. And you can't help but think about some of the roads you went down riding your bike as a kid. The field where you used to play baseball. You can't help but think about the gas station you went in so that you buy some candy or a pack of baseball cards. Or the church that you went to when you grew up. All these memories start to flood your soul, and you think about that childhood. And often it brings back a lot of good memories, right? Everything was great back then. That's what nostalgia is. You just remember the best, the good times, the good things. Well, that's ultimately what David is doing here next. Notice in verse 15, and David said with longing, "Oh, that someone would give me a drink of the water from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." No doubt about it, David could taste what that water tasted like on his lips as his mind jogged the memory. It bubble up in the back of his tongue, and he knows exactly how refreshing that drink was, that water that came from that well. Oh, I hate that the Philistines are there. Man, sure love to have one more drink from that well. Well, David makes an offhanded remark and didn't dream that anyone would take his wish as a command. But this illustrates the men's devotion towards their king David. There, it goes on to say in verse 16. So the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines, drew water from the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Now, can you imagine this in your mind's eye? These three men, they've heard what David has said, and they said, guys, let's do this. We can do this. Three! What, against a garrison of Philistines? Let's go. This is what our king wants. Let's go. And so you imagine they're making their way through the Philistines and they're fighting their way, cutting men down right and left. And meanwhile, two of them are guarding the well, and the third one goes and takes his canister and dips it in the well. I got the water, guys. Let's go. And then they fight their way back out. And against insurmountable odds, they make their way back to David. Say, David, we overheard you. We know how much it would mean to you to have a drink from the water of your hometown, the town where you lived and shepherded sheep, the town that you often could freely just go to that well, take that drink. Here you go. Wow. David had to have been stunned that these men would even consider doing this. And David thinks about it before he takes a sip. I can't drink this. Why not? Because he saw that drink not as water, but as lives. The lives of his men. The blood of these men. Notice verse 17. He said, far be it from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is this not the blood of the men who went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore, he would not drink it. These things were done by the three mighty men. He wouldn't drink it. The end of verse 16 says, but he poured it out to the Lord as a drink offering. It wasn't wasted. It was consecrated. You see, it was too precious for him to use as refreshment for himself. This kind of unselfish devotion and love belonged solely to the Lord. The Lord who made these mighty men. The Lord that blessed these mighty men with gifts. Who knew them before they were formed in their mother's womb. That kind of service, that kind of love, well, that belongs to God. And so he consecrates it. I don't think the men would have been offended by that. If anything, they probably would have been like, that's amazing that he thinks that that's that beautiful a gift. That probably made them love David more. This shows how much they loved David already, but now they probably love him more. They knew that David was no armchair quarterback or commander or king. He was one with them. He knew their names. He slept under the same stars with him on stony and thorny ground. He stood with him shoulder to shoulder in bloody combat. Like roaring lions together, they attacked the enemies of Israel until the trumpet sounded the signal of victory. They loved him. And he loved them. And it was their pleasure to bring him this water. And no doubt a pleasure to see that he felt undeserving of that water. So we've got the giant slayers. We've got the legendary three. We've got the story of devoted love. And then fourthly, we're going to have what's called honorable mention. Honorable mention. He still has other men to mention. He says a secondary layer of three. They're not attaining to the first level of three, but they were quite impressive themselves. And I mention honorable mention because in verse 19, you'll notice, was he not more honored of the three? And again, you'll notice here in verse 23, was he not more honored than the 30? So what is he talking about here? Well, he's saying that there was some men that came, that they were even more honored than even the legendary three. We'll talk about who that was in a second. Now that didn't mean that he was at the same level, because he, it goes on to say in verse 19, he did not attain to the first three, So he wasn't at the same, we might say, enough stars on the chest, right? But he was more honored. That is that the people almost, he was more popular, more recognized, more visible. And if he was walking down the street, someone might say, ah, there's Abishai. And I give it away. That's one of the guys. There's so many stories about Abishai. So we would talk about the honorable mention here. Verse 18. Now Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, the chief of another three, he lifted up his spear against 300 men, killed them, and won a name among these three. Was he not more honored of the three? Therefore he became their captain. However, he did not attain to the first three. Abishai, he was fearless, wasn't he? Remember, he was the guy that we just read earlier that killed Ishbi, Benobab, or whatever his name was, right? The giant. He killed him to save David. Well, he also killed 300 as well in combat. He was a recognizable, popular guy. He even stepped in as commander over Joab at one time, as we've read in our studies. And I've got to mention this. Abishai, the brother of Joab, that's the only time he really mentioned Joab's name in this. And it is striking that Joab's name is missing from the mighty men of David. And all I can think is because of the times in which Joab took the law into his own hands, wrote his own direction against the orders of the king. Now, what's interesting in verse 20 is the name Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada. Now, why is it interesting? Well, we'll read about what he did. He's legendary too. But Benaiah essentially becomes Joab's replacement in the future. So he was a powerful man in himself, though he was under Joab, as Joab was the general. Now here's some of his feats of accomplishment. Benaiah was the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man from Kabzeel, who had done many deeds. He had killed two lion-like heroes of Moab. He also had gone down and killed a lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. Oh, I love those details, don't you? We talked about this morning, it's just ironic that we happened to talk about this morning, about the power of lions, right? You just don't go and attack lions and beat them every day. I mean, that's legendary stuff. David did it. Well, so did Benaiah. He did as well. Oh, and by the way, he did it in a pit on a snowy day. The details. Paint the picture in our mind, right? That would be so hard. And yet, it was done. You also notice verse 21, he killed an Egyptian, a spectacular man. Your version might say a handsome man. It pointed out how beautiful he looked, how gorgeous he must have looked. But he died beautiful. The Egyptian had a spear in his hand, so he went down to him with a staff, wrested the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and killed him with his own spear. These things Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, did, and won a name among the three mighty men. Honorable mention. And then now what you see next from verses 24 through 39 is a list of 30 mighty men. Now I'm not going to read through it all today. I'll save you the butchered names. Even though today would be the day to do it, right? Because Justin's absent. Because if I did it today, he wouldn't be able to make fun of me. But if he was here, I would never hear the end of it. In fact, you might talk to the kids one time. There was a funny time where he just wanted to get a good laugh at my expense. And you know, I don't mind laughing at myself. So he said, hey, I want you to read these names of David's mighty men. And let's see how you do. I didn't do very good. And there was consequences because of that. But again, I'll digress and let you talk to the kids about that one. He likes to make fun of me. So I don't have the silver spoon tongue, right? You know, but oh well. There is one name, though, I want to take note of. And that's the last one. Notice there, verse 39. And Uriah the Hittite. 37 and all. That's not an accident that he's there at the end. That's on purpose. And by the way, that's not a demotion either. That's a place of significance. That when you leave the conversation of the greats of David's men, that you leave thinking about Uriah. What a powerful thought. David never forgot what he did to Uriah. And he doesn't want us to either. He doesn't hide his sins of the past. He had a lot of men look up to him, including Uriah. But David was no superhuman. He was a sinner too. And there was no way David could have had this success that he had in his kingdom and his career without God's forgiveness. That's abundantly clear when you see Uriah's name here. And also, there was no way David could have had the success without a few good men. And Uriah was one of those men. Don't you ever forget about it, David says. And I believe God says the same thing too. To remember what others had to endure so that David could be lifted up in success. It's amazing to think about it. No doubt David was not prideful about this. He wasn't happy about this. He was ashamed of this. But he says there, don't forget. Don't forget. I did not get here by myself. I got here in spite of myself. Because serve an amazing God who can do all things and is abundant in mercy, forgiving transgressions. And here's a man who I let down and did wrong. I want to say David's a good example to us. We are to be humbled by our failures, but not haunted by them. Don't let the devil haunt you with stuff buried in the sea of God's forgetfulness. Yes, I did those things. I know I've done my dirt and I've got my list of things in my past, and it always reminds me. It reminds me that it's by the grace of God I am what I am. David could say that. Paul was the first to say it. And you know the list of dirt that Paul did. So that he could acknowledge this, that's the truth. It's by the grace of God that I am what I am. David's mighty men. A few good men. Okay, so that's the what, right? We've seen a few good men, and you've seen them receive their purple hearts and their medals of honor. That's the what. What's the so what? What's the so what of all of this? Well, as David had those mighty men to help, our king, when you think about it, when he was on earth, he had his men too. And they might not have looked like mighty men, but they certainly were mighty because of their king. But even now, friends, as Jesus is in heaven, he still has his disciples, his mighty men and women. And our king today still has these disciples in the church. That's you and that's me, isn't it? And he has a holy record. He remembers every battle. He remembers every heroic deed. He remembers every giant you've conquered in life. Every insurmountable odds that you face to fight for his cause. And every wish of devotion or command of devotion that he gave that you fulfilled, it also comes before him as a drink offering, a sweet smelling aroma. You see, we get to be his few good men and women today. And as we see it recorded here, we know he records it there. And he sees you battle and fight the good fight of faith. And he records it in his ledger in the Lamb's Book of Life. So friend, who is on the Lord's side? Who will face the foe? As the song says, who is on the Lord's side? Who for him will go? I mean, that's the question, isn't it? That's the question for our kids. That's the question for our teens. That's the question for Mr. Businessman or widowed woman. That's the question. Are you on the Lord's side? Who for him will go? Would our deeds, our work, our fight be in the annals of records? That's the so what. That's the purpose of this study. Is so that those that are not enlisted may enlist in the army of the kingdom and serve the king. And those that are enlisted, that they might be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Are we his few good men and women? Or are we MIA, missing in action? Who's on the Lord's side? Thank you for your attention tonight, and I hope that there's been some encouraging things that we've learned from this study, these war stories of a few good men. Remember that it's a team effort. We all have a part to play. And that part is important to God. And combined, it accomplishes His great will. If you're not a Christian, become one by obeying the gospel, repenting and being baptized. Be clothed in Christ. Have your sins washed away. See, faith is the victory that has overcome the world. And when you by faith operate by the will of God, you will find victory in Jesus. And if you've fallen away or you've failed your Lord, you are MIA. Why not come back to the Lord's side and fight the Lord's fight, joining this great army here? If we can assist, won't you come while we stand and while we sing? Affection's been nailed to the cross. Is thy heart right with God? Dost thou count all things for Jesus but loss? Is thy heart right with God? Is thy heart right with God? Washed in the crimson flood, cleansed and made holy, humble and lowly, right in the sight of God.